Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You see people, they come into money or they come into fame and, yeah, they change. And I was never allowed to even think about doing that because my mates or my brothers would just beat me down. And at the end of the day, we're all just bare bums in the shower, really.
From the team at Men's Health Australia, you're listening to Strength Sessions, a podcast that goes beyond the definition of strength. I'm Scott Henderson.
And I'm Lincoln Lewis. And on the show today, we are joined by a bloke who wears many hats. He's a three-time world champion surfer, a businessman, a shark attack survivor, and a soon-to-be dad. So yeah, you pretty much guessed it. It's the legend himself, Mick Fanning.
Now, Mick has always got a lot going on in his life, and since he retired from surfing in 2018, he's only been getting busier. From launching and selling his brewery, Bolter, to now working with the conservation of sharks, Mick joins us now to talk about it all.
Hey, Mick Fanning, welcome to the studio.
Good to have you. How are you? Yeah, good.
Welcome to Strength Sessions. So, mate, cheers. Before we dive in, congrats are in order. Baby on the way, new fiance. Mm-hmm. How good?
Yeah, no, it's a bit happening at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, we found out having baby in August and... yeah, so I thought I'd slip over and got my knee back in working order. So let's see if I'll test it out.
Bend down. Yeah. How good. Now, mate, I remember reading a biography back in 2009. Mm-hmm. I'm calling it most premature biography in the history of books. There's been so much that has happened since that time.
Bit on.
We're having a little chat about this before you got in, mate. It's like even if we have a little catch-up chat weeks or even just a couple of months in between chats, we need so much time for a new catch-up because you are just always moving around. You're always busy.
Yeah. So I'm gonna take it back from the last 12 months just to start with because so much has happened then. Mate, since then you've sold Bolter.
Mm-hmm.
How, I guess we'll start with that. How was that? You know, obviously that's kind of like a baby saying goodbye to a baby. And
Yeah. Look, it was a big decision throughout the whole team. We sort of got an offer that we couldn't really refuse. You know, obviously we built it up as our baby and we're all so passionate about it. But in saying that, we're all still there.
Yeah.
You know, we sold the CUB, but they've kept us on for the next 5 years just to keep steering the ship and you know, still be involved and making sure that the beer's still the same, the vibe's still the same, and we're still having a lot of fun. So, awesome. Yeah, well, that was a big part of the contract was, you know, Scotty still makes the beer how he wants to make the beer. And, everyone was happy in that sense. And it was a tough decision, but at the end of the day, it was really good security for our staff to, you know, knowing that they're all locked in for 5 years is pretty cool. Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's things that get thrown out, oh, you guys are sellouts and this and that, but we created this brand from scratch and it's not something that we just want to throw away, you know. So, you know, you put so much time and effort into it, especially the staff that are in there day in, day out, like our upper management team, the guys on the deck brewing the beer, making sure everything gets done right. Like they pull some massive hours, and so like really needed to make sure that those guys were really looked after and made sure that those guys were happy with the decision. It wasn't just like we're coming in and just getting a paycheck and leaving.
See you guys.
Yeah.
Fanning out.
Now it's cool to hear that because like it's a testament to obviously your character and I'm sure to the other fellas who have started Bolters, but I just want to take it right back. This is the way you're talking about this. This is the only way I've ever known you. And when I say that
ever known you. You were the first interview I ever had, and I was this little 17 or 18-year-old Grommy, and it was the first job I ever had as an interviewer, and I think this is the first thing I've done interview-wise since. But you were just so patient with me, and I remember this. You were so giving and generous with your time, and then I remember a year later I got home and away, and I was walking around ANZ Stadium for State of Origin, and then I just hear this bloke call out. First, I hear Lincoln, and I didn't really hear it that well. Then I just heard, "Go New South Wales, Queensland sucks." And I turn and I see you standing up, looking at me, just waving, just like with this biggest grin on your face.
Yeah,
and, mate. And I was so stoked because, like, obviously myself, Scotty, so many people everywhere look up to you and idolize you. And every interaction we've ever had has always just been one of just a giving, generous nature. And the stories that people I've spoken to that have had interactions with you since always have that exact same image of you, impression of you. And I kind of, the question I want to ask through all that is, like, through everything, nothing has ever changed. And do you, like, you've got such a great mindset, and I want to know, what do you attribute that to?
Yeah, look, I guess it's just older brothers, you know, and I've got a great group of mates. You see people, they come into money or they come into fame, and yeah, they change. And I was never allowed to even think about doing that because my mates or my brothers would just beat me down so quick. And
Link does that to me all the time.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, look, and at the end of the day, we're all just bare bums in the shower, really. You're not like. Just because you use better soap doesn't mean you're better than someone else. But yeah, that's just the way I've been brought up. And on the giving side, I guess it's more just we didn't have much growing up, and everyone just sort of worked as a team, and everyone did their best. And so yeah, I sort of still just that sort of vibe of just like, all right, just do what you can when you can, and if you can help someone, help them. If you need help, put your hand up, you know.
Well, mate, on the helping thing, one thing that's really resonated with me this last year is you've become quite an outspoken advocate for the protection of sharks,
mm-hmm.
which obviously, you know, the infamous Jay Bay attack. And I think to see someone like yourself that's had that experience, you know, there's like yourself and Paul De Gelder that I kind of hold on this pedestal for you know, you've both had your own sort of separate experiences with sharks and now you're out there protecting them. Is that something that it kind of grew from that experience at Jay Bay, or is that something that you've always, just as a surfer, had that connection to the ocean?
Yeah, look, I think it's just that something you always have with the ocean. Yeah. You know, obviously the shark thing got brought to light with my interaction in Jay Bay, and especially because there's been so much activity around Ballina, and you know, I've had it's affected friends that I'm close to. And yeah, I personally just want to learn more. You know, I just finished a doco with this film studio and Nat Geo and Taylor Steele, and yeah, we've gone on this journey of trying to figure out why sharks are doing what they're doing, and also how important they are for the environment, but also too, for me, it was a big personal journey to see if I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm still messed up in the head or not.
And what did you find?
You'll have to wait and see. Oh. No spoilers here, mate.
Almost got the exclusive.
I actually didn't even think that. I was just drawn in.
No, it was awesome fun. Like the whole experience was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, we went to the Bahamas, we went to Miami, and then down to South Australia, and had some really cool people come in on the experience. And yeah, I learned so much about them. I learned, you know, I guess people picture sharks and you say shark and they think of just killers in the water, which it's so not, you know. It was really interesting for me to even learn that, you know, like just how important they are for the oceans, and you know, especially with so much talk around climate change, and they're a really good mark stick for what's happening in the oceans on top of climate change and stuff. So it was very interesting.
Yeah, unreal. And I guess, you know, you've retired, and now I want to just kind of turn the focus onto surfing a little bit. And you've told me before you don't want to announce your comeback through men's health, so that's totally fine. But are you going to take, you're taking on a role, like a mentor role with the Australian surf team, right?
Or? Yeah, look, for a while there, I was sort of planning on helping out Bede with the coaching and stuff and actually going, but now I'm having a baby. I had to put that all on the back burner and I might have to go to France instead now. So, yeah, I'm not going to make it over this year, but... on the mentor thing, it's sort of just, look, I've experienced a lot, in the surfing role, in the surfing world. And I've always told people if they ever wanted to, you know, learn or get help or, you know, even just bounce ideas, that's something that I'm always willing to open my books to. I was never a person, you know, some people keep all their secrets to themselves and I was never that guy. I was like, I would tell guys in my heat, like, you know, this and that.
Don't paddle for that
if
you know it's good for you.
Heard those stuff.
But it was just more, look, I've done my experience, and if you want to use that stuff against me and you beat me, then awesome. What I'm doing is great. But if, you know, I love the extra challenge too. But I'm always open to helping. And that was sort of a big thing working with my coach, Phil McNamara, as well. We're always open to new people coming in and helping them achieve their goals as well. So.
Unreal. Mm. And so, you know, obviously, you know, you have been through it all. You know, you've had 3 world titles. I guess going right back to 2004 when you tore your hamstring off the bone, you said that was kind of a turning point because, you know, you hadn't been taking your surfing as seriously as it could have been. And, you know, that focusing on that recovery and obviously the lead up to your second world title in 2009, that was kind of the formative part of your career. Is that true? Is that...
Very much so, yeah. You know, up until that point, things came pretty easily for me. You know, it was, you know, I got on tour after my second year of trying, first year number 5 in the world. And, you know, I was like, oh, I can do this. When I did my hamstring, I was just like, I didn't appreciate everything that I had. I was sort of being, you know, a little obnoxious little brat. And I got to a point, I remember watching it on TV, I was watching a heat, and I thought I actually got absolutely smashed in this heat, but then the more I watched it, I was like, actually, I didn't lose by that much, and it was just because I wasn't that sharp, because, you know, a few nights before, I'd been on the piss. So it was this huge guilt came over me, and it tore me up, like... I didn't really sleep for a couple of days because I was just so angry, and it shifted my whole focus in that injury as well. I was like, all right, if you're going to do something, do it right. And so, yeah, fully just shifted everything. And, I'm so glad that it, like, even though the injury was real shit, but I got to watch that and I got to realize what I get to do is such a blessing. And then... I thought I'd give it my all. And
injury itself almost might have been a bit of a blessing in disguise, you know, so to speak.
I think they all are. I think they all are in a way. You know, everyone thinks that, you know, I always believe that things happen for a reason. And it definitely was for me. I don't think I would have achieved what I did achieve if I didn't have that injury. I probably would have just been, you know, an almost there guy. I don't think I would have like committed as hard as that I needed to. But also too, like going through that whole process, I learned about the body. I learned about my mind, you know, just food. And so it was a real blessing in disguise. And then as I started going through my career, I felt things just starting to shift. I felt like, you know, I guess people always sit there and go, oh, you know, retired because of his year they had in 2015. But it was, I was talking to people, you know, earlier, you know, even through my 2013 world title year, I was like, hey, I don't know how long I'm going to be here for. Like, I don't know how long I'm going to be on tour for. Like, there's different things in life that I want to do. And but now, like, once I got off tour, the big focus is just experiences. It's about putting yourself way out of your comfort zone, but also trying to learn from these experiences, like, you know, what am I going to take on to the next chapter of my life.
It's funny how you called it tour life then, because it almost, like, when you look at someone like yourself and all that you've achieved since you've retired from surfing world, it's not actually retirement. It's literally just an evolution of your career. And I feel like saying tour life, that's kind of the best way to put it, because you've almost been busier and kind of having these outrageous experiences. You know, you, like you said, fatherhood, but then you've entered entrepreneurship. You're still exploring. You're still expanding your surfing life. It's almost just like you're becoming the surfer of the future.
Old. I think people sort of, they do their sport, or, you know, especially for sports people, because you do retire from your sport at such an early age. That was a big part of me, is like, I still want to go and surf all these waves before I get too old and I, you know, break. But also, that was, sometimes sports people lose themselves in what they do. That becomes their identity.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, okay, I am a surfer, but that's not exactly who I am. I want to be more than just the guy that's gone and won world titles or won events. So evolving from that has been a really fun challenge, and, you know, just going and trying new things, like trying to host the documentary and entrepreneurship and all these sort of things. You don't really have time when you're on tour, when you're focusing on your craft, but now I do have time. It's sort of like, let's give it a go, see how it goes.
Awesome.
Yeah. And yeah, look, some go good, some go bad.
And I guess that's a really important point as well, you know, of athletes when they hit that retiring from competing, being tied up in that identity. And then you see so many stories of, you know, athletes kind of, you know, just trying to find themselves and almost losing their way a little bit because they were so tied up in their sport. How do you attribute to, I mean, that kind of hasn't happened to you. What do you attribute that to?
Look, I'll be honest. I'm one of the lucky ones where I've been able to go and do things outside of the tour due to the fact that I got great sponsors, I got great support. Not everyone's that lucky. You know, I've got mates who are on the building side after tour, and I even just had this conversation the other day. It's like, you know, aren't all surfers all set up after tour life? And like, there's very few. So yeah, look, I'm very lucky in that sense. But in saying that, I'm willing to take chances. I'm willing to take a risk and just see what comes of it. But yeah, not everyone has that luxury.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you miss tour life at all?
No. No, it's... Look, I still love watching the tour. Like, I probably love watching it way more now that I'm outside of it than I did on tour. Because when I was on tour, I was always thinking, you're always thinking about, oh, if this guy gets through, it's going to affect my results. you're thinking, looking into the waves and stuff, you always got this anxiety in you, like, oh, I've got to go and surf this. So you're not looking at that as a pure fan, where now I'm outside of it, I can look at it as a pure fan. I can sling shit at people and not feel bad about it, and have to go and prove myself in the same conditions. But it's definitely, I really enjoy watching it because I know the hard work that goes into what they're doing, but also you can see little different things of why things are going right or wrong for different people. And it's been fun just being a fan. I wake up at stupid hours just to watch the event. It's classic. Like, for the last day when the world title was getting decided this year, it was like, I was up at 2. I'm like, you know, checking in with the boys. Yeah. Is it on? Yeah, it was fun. It was good fun.
But you get to surf waves all over the world still if you, you know, if you want to. Besides the camaraderie, is there anything about the tour that you miss?
Yes and no. I felt like I really missed the people that I had on tour and the people that I'd go and see on tour, all the different friends around the world. But I sort of feel like I can go and see them whenever now. Or I can, if I miss the waves, I can always go back to these waves and not have to worry about putting on a jersey, because you don't actually surf that much when you're on tour. You're like, you've got your heat and then you have to sit around. There's a lot of downtime. But look, when I was in it, I absolutely loved it. I don't look back and regret anything on tour. It was just, I had a lot of fun. And I love for me, the best part of it was being able to challenge myself and seeing if I get ready and focused for, you know, for the event window and be the best I can possibly be at those times I was meant to surf. And that was fun. That's probably a part of me that I sort of miss a little bit, you know, just having to perform at certain moments. But in saying that, I don't walk around with anxiety anymore, which is good.
And looking back, you know, obviously such a big career, is there a wave, a win, a heat that stands out as kind of the peak of your career?
Yeah, look, I guess there's a few different things. Probably the event win that I'm most proud of is J-Bay 2016, you know, the year after Shark Incident. But going back there, you know, I didn't have to go back. I just wanted to go back and just be like, hey, I had unfinished business in my own head.
Yeah.
But on top of that, like not everyone knows, but I blew my ankle out 10 days before the event. I could barely even walk. So that was just the whole lead up to that event, and to go through that event was just really satisfying for me. It was a proud moment for, all right, I performed when I needed to perform and, you know, had everything sort of come together. But it was weird too, because during that whole event, I was so calm.
Yeah.
Which was really weird. It was just, you know how you just see sometimes things just happen and you don't, they call it the zone sometimes, but I wasn't really in the zone. I was just like, if I needed a wave, it would pop up. If I needed...
Well, that 2016 season, you were just like, as a fan, it was like effortless. It was, you know, like, was that the Bells win that you...
That was 15. 15 was
Bells?
Yeah, Bells.
But it was almost like you knew... You could smell that freedom, like you knew
that
retirement was coming, and you were actually enjoying. Like the surfing just was so free. And,
yeah, cheers. 2016, I sort of had half a year off.
Yeah,
and it was a lot of finding myself again. You know, the tumultuous 2015 year. It was something that I just needed to go and fill up the fun barrel again. Like I felt really empty. Mm-hmm. I just knew that. Everything, I was going on holidays after pretty much every event. I only did 5 events, which was good.
Yeah.
Going back to that question earlier about trying to find yourself after surfing, it was terrifying thinking about, okay, I'm going to take half a year off. Like, it weighed on my shoulders so bad. I was so scared to actually put it into words, but when I did, and it felt great. But then I had half a year of learning what off tour life was like.
Yeah,
and so I sort of had it's almost like an apprenticeship.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was for me. It was perfect. I needed it. Otherwise, who knows? I could be the maggot down the pub now telling people how good I was back in.
Well, I remember we spoke on the day that you announced your retirement, and you kind of said, and it was just a really great message. You were like, you know, it was kind of everyone I think on that day was asking you the same question. How did you know? How do you know? And you were like, well, when the love and the passion wasn't there, that's when I was going to step back. Mm. And that's kind of what the point you got to, where now it kind of seems like you're falling in love with the sport again, because that pressure is not there.
I was always in love with surfing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I started finding holes in my game you know, I wasn't preparing as well. I wasn't, you know, as focused, and that started. It's that guilt feeling started coming back from like 2004. You know, I was like, oh, if I'm not gonna do it, or if I'm gonna do it half-assed, then why be there? Yeah. You know, why don't you go and just do something else and do that full on? And so that was sort of a big thing for me. And yeah, I remember exactly when I decided I'm done. I was sitting in a car park for 4 hours waiting for a heat, and I'm like, there's got to be funner stuff to do than this. And it was such a beautiful day too. Like the waves were firing, and just I was just like, I got to go elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I made it right there and there. Yeah. I'm like, I'm out.
And we were just talking before, obviously next step for you, the next big step is fatherhood. Genius of getting a maternity shoot and then proposing so you get the engagement photos out of the way as well.
Yeah.
Absolutely genius.
It almost didn't happen. Yeah. Yeah. No, it was funny, you know, with Brie, I'm like, oh, look, because it was when all that rain was around, and I was like, I know there's going to be a window this Friday, arvo, and hopefully it works. And I was like I only myself and my friend knew, Corey, who took the photos, were like, let's go get it done. And Bree was like, I've got nothing to wear, I've got this. And we're like, well, we're not doing it. Like, don't worry about it. Let someone else tell the story, you know, because we hadn't announced the baby at that time. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, let someone else do it. And she's like, all right, we'll do it, we'll do it. And so I just fully hoodwinked her. When I fell over on one knee, she was just like, what? It was pretty special. But yeah, it's just everything came together that day, you know. It's like,
and he's so obviously the plan is to take a bit of time out from all these projects when the baby arrives. Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm not missing being there, so yeah, I'm sort of going to be home from, you know, July through to whenever I need to be. You know, I feel like it's such a big, important pinnacle in anyone's life that I want to be present. I want to be, you know, on the ground. Yeah. There with the cricket mitts, just come on.
Yeah.
Get my sleep in now. Yeah.
And mate, a question that we ask everyone that comes on this podcast, and there's no right or wrong answer, but in your opinion, in 2020, you know, what does strength mean?
Strength.
I almost enjoyed the reaction to the question more than the answer.
Yeah.
it's.
Well, I can give you like a real stupid answer and just go to someone who's strong. but yeah, look, I think it's courage. I think it's like being able to speak your own truth and be comfortable with that, and just being you. There's so many stereotypes now, especially with, you know, what you should be on, especially with social media these days. Like, everyone's meant to be 100% happy all the time, but, you know, it's okay to say you're having a shit day. You know, I think that takes a lot of strength to be honest with people. So I'll go with that for 2020.
Courage, yeah. Love it.
Love it.
Awesome.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate
Cheers.
It.
Thanks so much for listening to this season of Strength Sessions. We'll be back soon with more incredible stories.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is chisme ajeno too.
a section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.